Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. Today we are going to review a bourbon barrel scotch ale from Scotland called Innis & Gunn, the original, and compare it with the American IPA beer Modus Operandi. I compare them according to my taste buds' preferred inclinations. The beer sort isn't very expensive. It costs about 20 kronas, i.e. close to $2.40, for this regular size container. That is about 80 cents per 4 ounces of beer. The beer has got a 6.6% ABV. The ingredients are water, barley malt, hops, and yeast. This ale's malts is the US malt, crystal malt, and amber malt, though it is unclear to me where amber malt comes from. The hop is called Super Styrian, and it probably is from Slovenia, or it is from Slovenia. The beer is bottled in 33 centiliters, i.e. 11 ounces bottle. This particular beer's expiration date is not stamped anywhere on the bottle. Does the content thus last forever? Anyway, it is best served at 10 to 12 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 50 to 54 degrees Fahrenheit. It says on the bottle. How about the experience then? The color is, well, it's amber-like, almost a little bit light for an amber color, but it's a good color, I think. A little bit light. And about not even, well, 1.5 fingers tall head. You got a good sweet aroma. And it's got a good taste. It's rich. Almost a honey-like taste. Well, it is. And smoky, as it should be when barrel-aged. Well, it's not bread-like. Not exactly. And it's not yeasty. Taste on my palate, let's see. Sweet honey. It's not supposed, I think it's not supposed to be sweet, but I think it's honey-like sweet. And a little bit, well, normal bitterness. Yeah. Is it fruity? Is it candy-like? No. It's not exactly candy-like. No. Maybe caramel-like. Caramel-like. Yeah, it is. But is it fruity? It's toffee-like, but I wouldn't say it's fruitiness in it. It's not fruity. And the spices are mild, but they are there. Some peppery spice. The undertone is, well, toffee sweet. It's good. It's a good beer. The carbonation level. I wouldn't say that it's very well carbonated, but it's very good, it's balanced. And is it creamy? More toffee-like than creamy. I would say it's not creamy. Not exactly. And it's not acidic. And there are no aberrations. Well, I guess we have to skip the aftertaste because I cannot, I record this directly on Anchor and there's no pause on it. So I have to do this in one order. And well, what about grading then? Well, I don't hesitate to grade this beer a 10. 10 devils out of 10 possible. The best grading you can get. In my grading system anyway. It's really good. I like it. I wish I had another one. Anyway, I have another one, but not the same brand. Okay. Our next contestant is the American IPA beer Modus Operandi, hauled all the way from the Midwestern town or even city of Durango in Colorado. It is an expensive beer. It costs about 27 Swedish kronas, i.e. $3.20. That is just above $1 for every 4-cent liter of beer. But considering the transport challenges, it is not very expensive. There is a stream called Animas River passing through the town. But where this river's mouth is located, I don't know for sure. Possibly in the Gulf of California in Mexico. Which, of course, makes it impractical to transport beers to Europe on. Unless you transport the beers through the Panama Canal, perhaps, for a hefty price tag. Modus operandi has got a 6.8% ABV. The ingredients are water, barley malt, and wheat malt, and surely hops and yeast. It is canned in the American standard sized 35.5 centiliter can. It is best served at 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e., about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, according to Systembolaget. How about the experience then? Okay. This is amber in color. I think, yes. It's the light in this room. It's not the best. So it's sometimes difficult to determine what color it is. But it's got a two fingers head. 2 fingers tall head. It's difficult to smell the aroma through the foam, but I dropped some, spilled some on the floor. Held it the wrong way. But anyway, it's brownish, orangey, amber color, but it's okay. I'll get back to the aroma. It hasn't got a very distinct aroma at all. Hop aroma, perhaps. I like the taste. It's 6.8%, so there's no surprise it's rich, like the former beer, which was 6.6%. Is it bread-like? No, I wouldn't say so. It's a GST. Not exactly. Perhaps a little bit. But it's bitter. It's got a great bitterness in it. And the taste on my palate is a little bit stunning. It's an impact on me. Perhaps not strange, it's 6.10%. But last week, or the week before that, I tried a 10% beer, so... it's... I guess it's the carbonation level, which is quite high, but we'll get to that. Excuse me. It's not supposed to be sweet, but I think it is. I think most beers I drink, I think that other people don't judge or label as sweet. I do label them as sweet because I think it's... it's not very many beers, I think, that is dry, that are dry. But... I think this beer is very bitter, but also sweet. It's not dry, it's very round in its taste. In its flavor, because it's good. Is it candy-like? No. Is it fruity? I think it is some kind of fruitiness. Pear, perhaps. Pear. A little bit of orange taste on it, in it. Orange peel taste, and a little bit spicy. But what kind of spices? Perhaps some herbs, I don't know, but it's more the fruit in it, the fruitiness in it. It's orange peels above all. But some peppery spices, it's always the peppery one. I'm not good at spices, but I feel it's, I sense it's a peppery spice, like usually I do, but that's a very grateful, thankful spice to have in beers, pepper. Otherwise there are herbs, but Herbs I'm not good at. The undertone. Is sweetness, I think. And of course, bitterness. It's very bitter. And the carbonation level is high, as I said. Is it creamy? I think so. Even though it's an IPA, it's it's rich. I can say that, as I said before, it's rich. So maybe we leave it at that. We shouldn't call it creamy, but it's round in its flavor. It's not acidic, and there are no aberrations. And we leave the aftertaste. What about grading then? Okay, what do I grade this beer? This is also a very, very good beer. It's expensive, but I bet it's not that expensive in the Midwest. In the Americas, because that's where it's from. And transport of this beer must be quite high, much of the cost. I bet it costs a lot, especially if you're going to transport it through the Suez Canal. The Panama Canal. But for an IPA beer, I'd grade this beer ten devils out of ten possible. It's very good for a beer. I'd also grade it 10 devils out of 10 possible. I'm sorry, I grade beers very high because I like beers. Beers are not, it's not a passion of mine, but I like beers, and I don't like strange beers, like red beers or such. I like good beers. IPAs are very good. Sorry, excuse me. Innocent Gun is very good, the one I tried before. I guess I'm a little bit mainstream in beers, but I like this beer a lot. Modus operandi. I have to grade this beer 10. I cannot lie, because I think it's that good. Even though I graded the former beer, Innocent Gun, 10 devils out of 10 possible, I have to grade this beer too, 10 devils out of 10 possible, because it's a very good beer. What can I say? Okay. Absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. This lesson is called Sweden's Situation. Russia may begin by invading Gotland before taking the Baltic countries. In that case, they will butter up the United States and NATO. under false pretense that no NATO brotherland, within quotation marks, will be affected by the conflict between Russia and Sweden and perhaps Finland, if they do not take parts of our eastern neighbor Finland later on. Though before taking the Baltic NATO countries, Sweden and Finland are really at risk as non-NATO countries. But the Baltic countries will not be spared later, when it's too late for the US and NATO to intervene, unless they have already deployed air defense systems and mechanized troops in the Baltic. Not until Gotland is fully occupied and Visby Airport prepared when the Russians deployed the S-400 Triumph on the island. After that, there would be an assault on Finland or the Baltic countries. During the beach landing on Gotland from the sea, they are likely to use a mobile local surface-to-air missile type Pantsir-S1 or 9K-37M1 Buk B-U-K-K, with a not so long range, but a sufficient range. Russia cannot both run a cannon boat diplomacy against NATO / the USA, which they would have done if they started by deploying the S-400 Triumph system on Gotland, while they simultaneously are proclaiming reassurance to NATO. The Russians think long term. They have been doing so since before the Georgia War. If Russia is proclaiming reassurance to NATO, Russia also leaves a possibility open to build up forces as they wish along the borders of the Baltic countries during or after an attack on Sweden, with the hope that it would not be perceived as a threat by NATO. Then the attack on the Baltic NATO countries would come so much more suddenly, in the best of possible worlds, or the worst. The S-400 Triumph air defense systems based in Kaliningrad Oblast are now operational in Kaliningrad. The S-400 radar is capable of tracking over 100 targets at a distance of more than 400 kilometers and take on 12 of these 100 goals or targets at varying ranges depending on the type of missile used. The missiles that can be used have a range of 400, 250, or 120 kilometers. The 400-kilometer missile can reportedly fly at Mach 12, 9,100 miles per hour, or 14,700 kilometers per hour, with a 40,000 to 50,000 meter maximum flight altitude, and must be shot down at high or medium altitude. The S-400 Triumph system is optimized to shoot down either ballistic missiles or cruise missiles, but can also be used against signal surveillance aircraft and radar planes like AWACS. The 400-kilometer missile is said to be able to shoot down even fighter/attack aircrafts. S-400 Triumph's NATO report name is SA-21 Growler. The Russians can also utilize fighter aircraft with the R-37 Vimpel missiles with a range of 300 kilometers against AWACS. A ballistic missile is always a surface-to-surface missile. Iskander-M is actually a semi-ballistic missile, i.e. its flight path is within the stratosphere. It may be worth considering when discussing range. To fully flee the Earth's gravity, it requires a minimum speed of 11 kilometers per second. A rule of thumb is that the lower trajectory up to 45 degrees, the shorter the range of a missile, given the same conditions in other prestanda. A lower trajectory also means that the Iskander-M can maneuver throughout its whole flight path within the stratosphere. Iskander-M can be pre-programmed to avoid air defense missiles by a series of pirouettes in its final phase. The Russians claim that the Iskander-M missile cannot be shot down due to its maneuverability. It would be helpful if we could figure out in what phase of its trajectory one should try to shoot down an Iskander-M, so that it at least isn't in the phase where it maneuvers the jerkiest when our air defense missile reaches it. I guess time of impact depends on what type of air defense missile system we use. Most analysts in 2015 assumed that the Iskander extended range version with a range of over 600 kilometers must be the Iskander K cruise missile and not the ballistic missile Iskander N. Maybe so, but the range of Iskander M tends to be lowered following after what the Kremlin says for political reasons. Today, many here in Sweden say that the Iskander M has a range of 400 kilometers. I don't think so. Additionally, the range of the Iskander K is most likely also violating the INF agreement, even if the missile is carrying a heavier nuclear warhead. Should Russia forebode a threat in Europe, specifically in an American missile shield, they would take themselves the right to permanently deploy Iskander-M in Kaliningrad Oblast, from which it will pose a threat to Poland and also Germany, not to mention Sweden. The Russian military spokesman, then-Colonel Andrei Bobran, said that the extended Iskander missile is designed for operations against land-based targets such as command centers, force groups, air and missile defense facilities, and aircraft at airfields. He also said that, quote, the weapon systems have high tactical maneuverability and can be delivered. He should mean be transported by all types of delivery systems, including from aircraft, end quote. What is most foreboding with the Iskander-M is that in its extended version, it probably covers the Stockholm area within its reach from Kaliningrad. It's called 9K720 Iskander-M, or SS-26 Stone, Extended Range Version Program, which Putin developed after Bush's proclamation of America's right to preemptive nuclear strikes and his intended missile base in Poland. The missile's warhead generally weighs more if it is nuclear, i.e. approximately 750 kilograms versus 480 to 700 kilograms if it's conventional. So paradoxically, it will be the Iskander missile carrying a conventional warhead that clearly violates the INF agreement. It may therefore be that Russia wishes to abolish the INF treaty for the possibility of extending the range of Iskander-M with conventional explosive charges. The head of the Russian General Staff, Nikolai Makarov, stated in an article published on November 17, 2011 in the Washington Post that, quote, under certain circumstances, local and regional conflicts may escalate into a full-scale war involving nuclear weapons, end quote. Can it be said any clearer? Putin may have his aim at small, non-nuclear and non-NATO countries like Sweden and Finland when he spoke of preventive Russian attacks. If Iskander has a range of more than 500 kilometers with a 750 kilogram nuclear charge, and perhaps even below that. Immediately after Makarov's statement in November 2011, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev showed up on Russia Today's network television media and mentioned in passing the number 500 kilometer range of Iskander-M missiles in conjunction with a declaring that Russia will be forced to resign from the START treaty if the missile base is built in Poland. And he also mentioned that Russia may or may not build its own missile shield. This figure, 500 kilometers, is completely contrary to what has been said from Russian authorities earlier on. We can only hope that the Russians have reconsidered now. But the core point with an extended range version is that it has a longer range than the previous Iskander-M missile, which satisfied the INF agreement. U.S. Colonel, retired, Sam Gardiner, believes it is unlikely that West at this time has the political will to raise the issue of Iskander on the agenda. The question does not raise interest even in military circles. Gardiner raised the question of Iskander's range in a seminar he held in both Stockholm and Tallinn for the Air Force in the region, as well as in the US Air Force headquarters in Germany. As for the reactions, quote, he could as well have been talking about the price of oranges on the Asian market, end quote, he said in a private conversation in 2010. What do you think is more important to Putin with the Iskander-M? To deliver nuclear strikes or to deliver conventional strikes? Always be prepared to motivate your standpoint. Thank you, and see you later, alligator, at a while, crocodile.
Oh, thank you.